Well, Ben, we just talked about it. The coaches, yeah, get jaded because of the ecosystem, its toxicity, and they're thinking in their heads, why should I spend all of this time, energy, and effort to do homework assignments for every single one of my players and then track their progression and then adjust it? And just why? Why do that? What is the point? Oh, well, Gary, you know, it should just come naturally from them because they care about the children and they care, you know, it's just people want to take that angle of, oh, well, it's the right thing to do. Well, guys, are the coaches getting paid for that? For that doubling their workload or tripling their workload? Are they going to get rewarded for that? Oh, well, it should be a reward in and of itself, Gary, that they're helping kids. Hey, buddy, why don't you double the time that you're at work today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. Why don't you, instead of working 40 hours at that office job that you've got, why don't you do 60, 70 hours a week and tell your boss, nah, I don't want to get paid more. It's cool. I just care because I know that what we're doing is good for the industry and the people that are ultimately the customers of this industry. It's good for humanity. I'm just going to go ahead and double my workload. Don't pay me more. And don't promote me. I don't want any benefits. What kind of a world are we living in where we have this mentality that coaches should just go out of their way and go above and beyond? Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today's episode is a high-level overview, a capstone, if you will, of all the 8 lessons of the masterclass that we have been producing podcast episodes for, which once more, I would encourage you to rewind the tape over the course of the past 10 weeks and have a listen to those 8 masterclass lessons. Today is sprinkling in a bit of all of those 8 lessons. And yeah, at times we will actually dive into hypothetical situations. I'll give you an example. I receive a number of emails from parents on a weekly basis over the course of the past 10, 15 years, asking for advice. And I give you a couple of hypotheticals in this episode as to how I provide that advice, whether it's good advice, bad advice, and the whole process about giving advice in general, because it is quite a difficult thing to do, as you can imagine, because everybody's context is different. Everybody's specifics are unique. Everybody's case is unique. So you have to be very careful if you really care about the families and the kids when somebody gives advice. So I would be very wary. Actually, I would give a word of caution. If you ask for advice to people and they give you direct answers as if this is the law of the land, ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know. Unless they have a crystal ball, unless there's some sort of magician giving such a straight, direct answer, I'd be wary of. So, okay. Well, parents, I would encourage you to go to 343masterclass.com, sign up for the program there, and then you can dive very, very deep, certainly a lot deeper than what we're capable of doing in audio-only format in these podcast episodes. And it's a lot more focused of a program also than, you know, than the free-flowing conversations that we have here online. Coaches, these episodes are for you as well. And you can go to 343coaching.com where you can sign up to a free program or a premium program. You decide what it is that you currently need. Obviously, I'm going to tell you that you need the premium program for sure, but that's not up to me, guys. It's up to you to get to know what it is that we've accomplished, to get to know us on a more personal basis, and then you make a financial decision based on that. And if you're coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you can go to 7v7coaching.com. So one last time, parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go. Coaches, 343coaching.com. And for the little ones, 7v7coaching.com. All right, Benny joins me once again for this capstone episode. Here we go. What are we talking about today, Ben?
Well, first, I'm buzzing, G. We got the last night, first game of the league, got the win.
Very nice. Against who?
El Dorado. So okay. they're a pretty good team. I feel like, you know, a lot of people always ask me, like, how's it going with high school? And, you know, how's the new role? And oftentimes I'm like, it's stressful. It's overwhelming. But then you have these moments like these where you get a big win and it's, I'm obsessed now. Like I can't wait for tomorrow's game again, you know? So the highs and lows of coaching.
Yeah. And this needs to be a whole podcast episode too, because there's highs and lows in every aspect of soccer and beyond soccer, clearly, because people are get really tired and the drudge or burnt out, or they're like, why did I choose this career path and looking for greener pastures? And, but then you get like some sort of massive win that can come in many different sorts of flavors. And you feel revitalized the way that you feel revitalized, Ben. And you're like, oh, you know, this is why I'm totally good. What was I thinking, you know, trying to change careers or something else before? Nah, man, I'm on the right path. I just have to keep pushing forward.
Yeah, that's one of the best feelings as a coach, for sure. Yeah. And even too, like when you lose, it kind of wakes your ass up, you know, because you hate that feeling after the game. Like you could have done more, or maybe you should have focused on this thing in training versus the other thing. So to both ends, it's addicting, Gary.
Yeah.
I know. Did you feel the same way when you're really into it with Brian's teams and, you know, they make a big tournament or like they're in the final? Did you feel yourself like excited to be going to the games or supporting the team?
No, of course. But I think it's a little bit different of a feeling when you're the guy, the focal point, and that you're under a tremendous amount of pressure. And then when you get a victory, it's like that, it's a release valve. The pressure all kind of goes away and your body is now relaxed and on a natural high, you know? So it's different if you're not the head focal guy or the focal point of the project, of the company, of the team, of the club.
And the funny thing too is like, you know, after a big win, everybody comes up to you and congratulations, you're doing a great job and keep it up. And then after a loss, everybody just bounces.
It's funny. This is another episode that soccer has no memory. It's a long known, not cliche, it's a long known thing. The all-time greats, you know, stemming from 100 years ago till now, have always said soccer has no memory. You could be like Pulisic is having an amazing season right now at Milan, but if he has a stretch of 10 games or 20 games or one season or the next season, if it's bad, it's over. Nobody will remember. Nobody will give a shit what he did this year.
1,000%. All right, Gary, let's hop into it. Sounds like we have found two new topics for episodes for a later time.
Yeah, yeah.
We've basically made our way through the entire philosophy section of the 343 Masterclass. Some things that we talked about, the five components of player development, possession soccer, using the wall is the best way to develop the soccer techniques. We've talked about elite soccer player characteristics, fundamental guide to soccer IQ, huge deficiency in the suburban player. We had a good episode on work ethic, sacrifice, mentality, and culture. And our last week's episode on repetition is the key. And to kind of close out the section on philosophy, there's one more lesson titled The Recipe. And it's a quick lesson, kind of basically says that, you know, now that you've got an initial taste of the rock solid philosophy required from going to point A to point B, that it's time to start taking actionable steps, and not just any steps, but steps that are rooted in a proven methodology. You also say that, you know, as you work your way through the lessons and the modules, it can bring your player from the realm of potential and philosophy into reality. And they're going to gain a better sense of what exactly a specific player needs to work on. You know, so some of the comments that I've been seeing in the episodes, it's like, oh, I wish you guys would go into more detail about what it is that my son or daughter exactly needs to do to become a better player or to achieve their goals. So I think a lot of players probably agree that youth soccer can feel overwhelming. And, you know, there's so much noise out there on social media or soccer discussion boards. So, you know, let's just start simple. If a parent comes to you, Gary, and I know a lot of parents do, to ask you, you know, what's the best way that my child can improve? Where do you even begin with that?
Well, Ben, we developed an entire program and continue to develop the program to just answer that question. The whole point of the entire program, a multi-year of development and experience, decades of experience poured into this program, is to try to answer that question. So imagine trying to answer that question here in a podcast episode, or less than a podcast episode, in the next 5 minutes. It all starts with, I know people don't want to hear it, but it all starts with saying, it depends. If a U15 youth national team player parent comes to me and say, hey, Gary, how can my kid improve? That's a much different discussion than a U10 player who's having their first ever competitive club experience, which is a lot different than an 18-year-old player who is now a professional player and the parents coming to me and saying, hey, what do we do next? How can my kid improve? So that gives you a taste already, Ben, of how complex this situation is. If we look at specific scenarios, then you can start really having a meaningful discussion. You feel me? Because if we keep it general, then okay, what am I going to say if we keep it general? We kind of touched on it in all the 8 philosophy lessons already. Hey, get a whole bunch of repetitions on the wall. Don't make it random repetitions. Make it patterned repetitions. For instance, alternating your foot, or for instance, working only on your weak foot, or for instance, working on the wall, but always or 95% of the time with the inside of the foot on the ground. Do it 5 yards away, do it 10 yards away, do it 3 yards away, do it 1 yard away, do it at different speeds. So you get what I'm saying here. It's a very complicated question, because then I can say, okay, let's remove you from the wall and then say, hey, you know what you need to do is you need to go and get a whole bunch of pickup games under your belt, because that's where you're going to develop your creativity. That's where it's unstructured. That's where you don't have somebody vigilant or helicoptering over you, telling you what you can and cannot do. And that's where you're going to have mixed ages. And that's where you're going to learn from the older kids who are maybe bullying you a bit. And that's how you're going to learn leadership skills, by mentoring the kids that are younger than you, you know, or maybe learning how to talk shit and learning competition and learning what it is to losing, having consequences because you're off the field, and learning how much fun it is to take it serious and win so you stay on the field for an extended period of time. So there's that piece of advice. And then there's the next piece of advice, which is, hey, you need to have a good coach also on your club team, because if you land on a club team with a coach that is mediocre or less than mediocre, well, you are not going to be refining your skills. And before you even refine your skills, you're definitely not going to be strengthening the core that is absolutely universal and fundamental to being a good footballer, because your coach may not even understand what the fundamental principles or fundamental skills rather are, and how to teach those fundamental skills and principles to their players. So you might be totally screwed if you have a shit youth coach. And that goes universally, whether it be U10 or U12 or U15 or U18. And then you can go down the rabbit hole of what a good coach should be doing, so that you as the parent can go and discern, this is a good coach, this is a medium coach, this is a terrible coach, and then guide your player accordingly. And then there's the home environment, Ben. So I'm rattling off the 5 components here, basically, kind of reviewing it. Then there's the home environment. Do you guys have a soccer culture in the home? What does a soccer culture actually mean? It's not just watching soccer games, although that kind of is a requirement. If there's no soccer in the home, let's just throw it all away. Forget about everything. Okay. If there is soccer in the home and there are soccer games on the television, what are you watching? What are you listening to? Okay. Are you watching and listening to MLS and MLS broadcasters, or are you watching La Liga? You know, are you watching Barcelona and Real Madrid, and who are the broadcasters? What language are you listening to as well? And how to be cautious in that arena also. What are you as a parent telling your kid as you guys are watching the game together? Hopefully you guys maybe watch some games together. Are you giving good advice? Are you giving bad advice? Are you giving no advice? The things are endless. Now, if you pose to me the question, Ben, hey, I have a U15 youth national team player. They are a center back. Here are sample videos of him playing, you know, assess him and then give advice. That's a different, I don't give you general advice like I just did. Or if you tell me, here's an 11-year-old kid, he plays for so-and-so here in Southern California in this competitive league for this particular club. They're a striker. They score all these goals and everything. But, you know, nobody's picking him up at the next level, whether it be ECNL or whatever it is. What does my kid need to do? Then that's a different discussion. So, Ben, great question. It is the question, obviously.
It's a million-dollar question that everybody wants to know. Something that came to mind to me, Gary, when you were, you know, rattling off all these things, is the idea of finding a good coach. And, okay, let's say your kid is a U10 player, very high-level player. And let's say, for example, right, the best team in your kid's area is coached by somebody who is absolutely shocking. And the reason why they're the best team in the area is because of the players that they have. would it be better for the parent to find a different environment with a well-meaning coach who's actually trying to work on, you know, a possession-based system and trying to incorporate the philosophy? Or should the player be playing with, you know, this high-level team that has high-level players but not the best coach? Does that make sense?
It does. Look, I'm not going to take the cop out of it depends, because it kind of still does depend, but I'll give you an answer. In my opinion, you go with the better coach at that age, at U10. For me, it's almost 90% of the time the right answer, because these are the formative years. This is where you need the most and the best mentorship possible, and not necessarily be on the team that wins all the time and is the best team in the region, because that could actually be detrimental to a 10-year-old or 9-year-old's development, because you don't get exposed as to your deficiencies. You're just winning all the time. And to make matters worse, you have a mid to low level coach that you gave me in this hypothetical that isn't really working on anything that's going to improve the player. Now, will the player continue to improve in that environment? Sure, because all contact with the ball is good contact with the ball. And being surrounded by great players is always a good thing also. So they'll get better. They'll improve. I just don't think it's the right choice. I think going with the exceptional coach at that age will pay way bigger dividends down the road.
Yeah. Especially the results, right? Parents are often so focused on the results of a team. Like, oh, this team's not winning. Let me go and find a different team that's, you know, winning tournaments and, you know, kind of trophy hunting. But at the end of the day, if the kid is not learning, it's not going to be worth the parent's time or the player's time, right?
Yeah. The challenge there is that maybe the parents also think that if the kid is on a winning team, then it's good for the kid's confidence and enjoyment in the game, versus in a perpetually losing team, the kid is always losing, the team is always losing, and the soccer experience is maybe a bummer to them. Potentially, not all the time, but potentially. And so maybe they're looking out for that sort of psychological angle instead of necessarily just trophy hunting and ego satisfying for the parents. There could be a significant element along those psychological lines. Does that make sense, Ben?
Yeah. I'm curious, though, Gary, what's your stance on club soccer in the U.S.? Like, does a kid need to play club soccer up until the age of, you know, 16, 17, 18, in order to have a successful playing career? Like, could a kid go until he's 15 years old without playing club and just be on like a Sunday league Mexican team that's trains 4 days a week and constantly playing games? Do they need to be playing for the top clubs in the area? You know, Pat, Strikers, Blues, Slammers. Is it necessary, Gary?
That's a good question. Is it necessary? I'm going to go literal with what you're saying. Is it necessary? No. Is it probably smart? Yes, to play the club thing. Are there exceptions that if you're not on these top club teams at 14, 15 years of age, that you can still go extremely far in the game? And that needs to be defined, obviously. Yes, of course you can. And of course you can develop in these unorganized, like here in Southern California, these unorganized sort of Mexican league, you know, out of the formal competitive club pay-to-play environment. Yeah, you'll develop, you could get better, but it is more of a pickup sort of environment, but you are getting that pickup culture along for the ride, in my opinion, which is valuable. But ooh, like 14, 15, if you're not already in the competitive club circuit, you're chances are, the statistics say, you might, you know, fall through the canyons of American soccer, as I say, not fall through the cracks.
Right. Is that because it's difficult to get platforms without being in those environments?
Yeah, the platforming, it starts becoming important, I'd say around 14, 15 years of age. That's probably the number one thing. And unfortunately, we don't have promotion relegation here in the youth soccer scene. So it's kind of disgusting. There should be promotion relegation, because otherwise you're picking the winners and losers at the club level. What clubs can or cannot compete in certain leagues, which is just it's fucking wrong, Ben. It's fucking wrong for these reasons. You know, you don't have a pathway. You have to kind of bow down, kiss the ring, and say, okay, I guess I have to go to like Pats, or I have to go to Irvine Strikers, or I have to go to the LA Galaxy, or you have no choice at that point. I lost track of your question, but the platforming. So the platforming is probably the number one reason. And then the number two reason is getting into an organized or more professionalized sort of environment. Because if the plan is to go to college, or the plan is to, I mean, satisfy the dream, which is a very small percentage of being professional, those are professionalized environments. And you have to have a little bit of a taste of some more structure and discipline associated with your routines. Because Ben, in the non-competitive club, in the Mexican league, in the more disorganized sort of circuits, you can like show up late to the games and they'll throw you into the games, or you can miss practices, you know, and if you're good enough, they'll still put you in the games. Or you can not show up for half a season and then show up midway through the season. And since the team needs numbers, you know, they're always short people, they'll throw you in the game. There's just complete lack of the professionalized environment that is required at the next level. So I think a combination of those ingredients, it's kind of important maybe at that 14, 15 years of age to kind of be thinking about, yeah, making that transition.
You mentioned like this idea of promotion relegation at the youth level. And for example, like MLS Next, like you can't really compete your way into MLS Next. You literally have to meet like a certain criteria, meaning you have to have this many number of teams within your club. You have to have this amount of facilities and playing space, or these amounts of resources. So for like smaller local clubs, it's basically impossible to get into this league, right? So that's difficult. And especially if you don't have a club in your area, like, you know, I know that some kids that are playing MLS Next are probably driving 2 hours just to get to training, which is, you know, that's shocking.
It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong that there's no promotion relegation. Number one, the criteria that you just listed is not the only criteria. The criteria that nobody talks about and is just as important, if not more important, is you have to kiss the ring and be one of them, Benny. You have to be one of them. You have to culturally be aligned with them and be a loyalist to them and not have any ideas or say any ideas that create friction or create disagreement with their philosophy. So you could have a great club, great infrastructure, meet all those things, those bullet points that are kind of like on paper. And some of them aren't even on paper, Ben. It's not a transparent process. And they'll just say, nah, you know, you have too many strange ideas, Benny. You're not allowed to compete in this circuit. It's just wrong, dude. And with regard to the communities that might not have a club in the competitive circuit nearby, yeah, it's fucking wrong. Why can't that the local club that exists there, which might be small, it might not be as well connected, why not have the opportunity for them to compete their way into different competitive circuits? Let's say that they win their local region. They should be elevated to the next higher competitive level. And if they win that next higher competitive level, they should be promoted again. And the teams that are in a competitive circuit, if they suck ass, well, then that means or could mean a variety of things. It could mean that that club sucks at recruiting. It could mean that that club sucks at retention. It could mean that that club sucks at hiring appropriate or good coaches because that team sucked. Maybe the coach sucks. You know, it could be a whole bunch of negative factors involved as to why that team came in last place or second to last place in the competitive circuit. Well, if there's no consequences for that, then there's no incentive for the quote unquote youth club to do better and find the right coaches and not hire the wrong coaches, or to have a scouting network to identify the better players and not keep the worst players. You feel me? Then they might, a lot of clubs keep the worst players because the parents are politically connected, you know, or keep the worst players because the parents pay the fees or big amount of fees. Well, then that's not competitive. That's not competitive sport. That's not competitive soccer. And the whole ecosystem doesn't get to identify who are truly the better clubs, who are truly the better coaches, who are truly the better leadership teams of clubs, director of coaches, sporting directors, whatever. They don't get to identify truly who are the better players because half the squad probably shouldn't be on the squad. They should be replaced by you know, these other kids playing in these lower levels, but maybe those kids in lower levels first aren't identified because the club doesn't have a scouting network. Number two, maybe they can't pay either. So they're like, nah, or maybe the parents aren't politically connected with the club. And so those better kids aren't on the squad, and half the roster are littered with kids who should not be on that level of competition. So the promotion relegation links all of this stuff together.
Yeah, can you imagine, Gary? I mean, like you just said, there's no incentives for coaches or clubs to be great. But like, imagine if your club or your team environment had the opportunity to like move up into the ranks or get into MLS next. Like, coaches would be working their balls off every single session. Versus now, it's like, all right, well, this club isn't going anywhere. I'm going to show up. I'm going to drop down these columns. I'm going to collect my paycheck, you know, and send the kids on their way. But imagine, Gary, just even the quality of sessions, the energy, the focus, the preparation for trainings, everything would drastically improve, no?
All of it. And the culture included, because now imagine if the leaders of the club, and that includes the coaches, have that hunger, that desire, that strive for excellence, that trickles down throughout the entire club and including the players. But now it doesn't exist, Ben. It's all one large sort of, I don't want to call it a scam, but one large lethargic status quo, week after week, season after season, slog, collect dues and then pay the expenses, pay the coaches, pay the fields. It's just one stupid, mediocre business. You know, I don't want to call it a scam. It's kind of scammy, but I don't want to call it a scam because the youth clubs here in the country are forced into this business model because there is no promotion and relegation. They are forced into it. And I don't blame the coaches for their lack of hunger, desire to excel year over year. And then I'll blame many of them that get jaded, because when you're first a coach and you don't understand all of this, okay, you come in hungry. You want to do the best possible thing. And then it's only after a course of many years when you start opening your eyes a bit as to what this is all about and that your hard work doesn't pay off in the end, you get jaded, you know, and then you turn into the mediocre coach or the coach that doesn't really care all that much. I don't blame them because they have been forced into this business model, the youth clubs, and the coaches are forced into this culture, this behavior. The incentives are not aligned, Ben.
Yeah. I think myself, Gary, and probably other people listening to this are curious as to your insight as to like how it is around the world, meaning like the youth clubs in Europe or in, you know, Latin America. How is it over there?
Yeah. First and foremost, let's put a disclaimer out there. I have never been a coach at a club overseas. And so I've never been a practitioner within a club overseas. So let's put that aside here. So I'm just going based off of my personal, you know, experiences being there and talking to people and being in the environment for stints of time and then talking to folks who are practitioners overseas for years and years and years and years, you know, me talking to them and what they have told me. The clubs overseas are actual clubs, Ben. Okay. What does that mean? That's a whole long discussion. But in short, the purpose of the organization is one, to be competitive, but truly competitive. I just described the American soccer system and it is not truly competitive. But over there, it's competitive. And number two is to have a sense of belonging, you know, and real attachment to the community. So the clubs are really an institution of the communities more so than a strict business objective. And with that, everybody who is in the community and either plays for that club or goes to those club games or is a fan of the club, there is more integration and you feel truly a part of it. You don't feel like a customer like you are over here. Over here, there is a feeling of you are a customer. Now, if you've been at the same club here for a long period of time, your kid may have been at Pats for 7 years or at the Galaxy for 10 years, something, you can't help, you know, your human self, but to feel a part of it also. So I'm not demeaning or depreciating that, but it's not the same. It's not the same. You don't have this lifelong, daily, weekly attachment beyond the time that your kid is at this business. You have more of a transactional relationship here. So that's the distinction, Ben. Here, you are mostly just a customer, a transaction, and over there, you are a part of something for real.
I'm going to share something about last night, which kind of ties into it. I know it's not about, you know, club soccer, but you mentioned this feeling of inclusivity and, you know, everybody feeling a part of it. For example, at the stadium that we played at last night, it's lined up against, you know, a row of like 10 houses, meaning that like their backyard has the perfect view of the field. And the game, Gary, was at 6:30. I guess they just got lights installed on their field. But one of the neighbors is like pissed that they're having night games now. And so like in retaliation of this, the coach warned me before the game. He's like, hey, coach, just to let you know, there's a neighbor that's pissed. As soon as the game starts, he's going to start smoking weed during the whole game. And I kid you not, Gary, the entire game, this was lighting it up blunt after blunt. And it just goes to show you, like, I feel like in Europe or in, you know, in Mexico, if there's a high school game or like any soccer game going on, all of those neighbors would be sitting on the wall watching the game, feeling a part of the community. But here it's like the neighbors are trying to like stop the games from happening. You know what I'm saying?
I do. And there's, speaking more on the integration overseas that I've witnessed, there's a integration with the community. The clubs themselves build like local, or they'll build like a bar on the site, or they'll build like a restaurant or a coffee shop on the site. I don't know, or they'll crop up local businesses all around the field or the stadiums or whatever, even if it's a small little club, and people hang out there. So the analogy to your neighbor and those houses being next to the field, over there, it's exactly like that, but in a positive way. You know, all those neighbors would feel incorporated and a part of the club and be cheering. Like all the neighbors would be probably in their lawn chairs. Oh, it's game day. Yeah, let's get it on. You know, that's what you wouldn't have like a protest, you know, because the neighbors here that you just described clearly are not linked to the institution in any way.
And they'll probably, in Europe, they'll probably still be smoking, but to enjoy the game, juice.
Of course. I bet you that over in Europe, those neighbors would kind of invite friends over for game day, you know, and they'd have a big old barbecue or whatever, and while the game's going on in the backyard.
I wish it was like that out here, Gary. Yeah.
Well, it's because we don't have promotion relegation, Benny. That is why. That is exactly why.
Yeah. Well, Gary, we went on a mean ass tangent there.
No, that's fine. This episode doesn't have to be about the other thing. We can make it like a half and half. No problem. I mean, I take care of all the stuff in the intro anyway.
Yeah. Within the lesson, you mentioned a specific phrase, you know, going from point A to point B. So just in simple terms, you know, what does that look like in terms of player development from point A to point B? And you mentioned, you know, like, okay, if a U15 youth national team parent is reaching out to you, but like, let's be honest, Gary, there's not many of those out there. I feel like the majority of people out there have, you know, U10, U11, U12 players that aren't national team prospects at the moment. So for them, you know, what does it look like to get to point A to point B?
Step one, you come up with your objective, your short, medium, long-term objectives. I would suggest doing a short and medium term first off. The short-term objective is important because you have to feel some wins under your belt for you to keep going. So a short-term objective might be like, hey, assess your current club situation. Are you the best player, the mid player, or are you at the bottom of the roster in your current team? And maybe your season-long objective is to get more playing time. You know, or if you're a striker, maybe your season-long, and you play, maybe your season-long objective is, hey, score more goals than I did last season, you know, or what, I don't know, you get the idea, right? Come up with a short-term achievable objective, but that still kind of stretches you, and then take the necessary steps to get there. So clearly, the striker is the easiest one because it's the most objective thing possible. So if you want to score more goals, guess what? You better take more shots on goal on your own, right? Train outside the team environment, get a bag of balls, and get 1,000 shots on goal per week, you know, at the nearby park or at the nearby racquetball court, you know, where you have a wall there and the ball's going to come right back to you. Work on your stroke, work on your finishing technique, work on your power, work on your placement. I bet you if you do that, you will achieve an objective return, like scoring more goals. Okay. For a center back, it's a little bit more difficult, but you have to come up with something, invent something, and then achieve it. And then medium term, right, could be, hey, I'm on this team and this competitive club circuit. I know it's not the best. You know, maybe 2 years from now, I want to be in the next, at the next level. And you just take the lessons in the master class, man, whether it be the lessons on how to work on the wall, whether it be lessons on, you know, different sort of strokes, you know, if we're playing in possession, and you work on that religiously for 2 years and see how far it gets you. It's a difficult question to answer also, Ben, because it's so personal. Yeah, when I say from point A to point B, that's why the program is structured the way it is, because then the parents can pick and choose, given their specific scenario and case, what exercises or activities or things to do to get to point B.
Right. And I think that's the, you know, the amazing thing about the masterclass is that I have a feeling that most coaches out there aren't giving individualized plans for every single player on their team, meaning that the kids just show up twice a week and they do their thing at training. And maybe if the parent asks them like, hey, you're going to have some homework for the kid to work on, they give them one exercise to do, but it's not laid out like it is in the masterclass with an actionable plan. And hey, these are the things that you need to work on. If you're a center back, these are the types of strokes that you need to work on. If you're on the wall, there's 15 different exercises that you can do to, you know, help your players develop. So that's really the beauty of the masterclass is it lays it out for you, you know, right in front of your eyes. And I think it's not because coaches don't want to do that for their players, but I'm guessing, you know, most coaches just don't have the time.
Well, Ben, we just talked about it. The coaches, yeah, get jaded because of the ecosystem, its toxicity, and they're thinking in their heads, why should I spend all of this time, energy, and effort to do homework assignments for every single one of my players and then track their progression and then adjust it? And just why? Why do that? What is the point? Oh, well, Gary, you know, it should just come naturally from them because they care about the children and they care, you know, it's just people want to make that, take that angle of, oh, well, it's the right thing to do. Well, guys, are the coaches getting paid for that doubling their workload or tripling their workload? Are they going to get rewarded for that? Oh, well, it should be a reward in and of itself, Gary, that they're helping kids. Hey, buddy, why don't you double the time that you're at work today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day? Why don't you, instead of working 40 hours at that office job that you've got, why don't you do 60, 70 hours a week? And tell your boss, nah, I don't want to get paid more. It's cool. I just care because I know that what we're doing is good for the industry and the people that are ultimately the customers of this industry. It's good for humanity. I'm just going to go ahead and double my workload. Don't pay me more. And don't promote me. I don't want any benefits. What kind of a world are we living in where we have this mentality that coaches should just go out of their way and go above and beyond? Makes zero sense, Ben. Speaking of which, related to that, and because you were mentioning the master class and the program and the homework assignments, originally the master class was going to be geared towards, it was going to be a product for personal trainers, and it was going to be a product for like coaches, you know, so that they can go in here and say, okay, cool, I can give my left backs these sorts of exercises, the attacking mids like this, and then obviously hopefully improve their own soccer IQ with all the resources that are available. And then that naturally will flow to their players. And then after thinking about it for a while and experiencing the ecosystem a little bit more and the marketplace a little bit more, it just didn't make all that much sense because of what I just said. The coaches aren't going to do this. Okay. It's ultimately going to be up to the parents. The parents are the ones who care to stratospheric levels about their children. Obviously, I'm stating the obvious. They are the ones who will say, you know what? Yeah, I will open up my pocketbook. I will get into the program. I will learn as much as I possibly can. And I will execute as much as I possibly can for my kids.
So Gary, a lot of coaches listen to this podcast. Would you recommend that coaches recommend this product to the parents on their teams?
So it's a great question. Has a variety of answers. Here's one. I always recommend to everybody that you should know what a product is deeply and who's behind the product before you purchase or recommend it. Okay. So for instance, for coaches, if they're already part of the coaching membership, then they know what we're about. They know what we teach. They know the philosophy. They know all of these sorts of things. And then sure, they could recommend the masterclass, but it's kind of hard for me to say, oh, you should recommend it without those coaches being in the masterclass and seeing what's in there in the first place. Should they get the masterclass themselves? So for longtime members, 6-year members, members who have entered the lifelong learning of the coaching program, you know, we're going to make that this available to them. For others, I mean, if they want to jump on board, they can. I think it'll help them give homework to their players. They get to see the activities and so on and so forth. And then after they do that, if they like what they see, then sure, they should recommend all their parents to hop on board themselves. 100%. And then there's the other type of coach who, you know, is blind, doesn't really know what it is that we do, doesn't know our history, is not part of the premium membership. I mean, I would say don't sign up for it, because you might actually be one of those coaches who is completely misaligned to what we say. You don't believe in possession-based soccer as a great way of developing teams and developing players. You don't believe in our philosophy at all. You might be a coach who's, I'm going to say it, brainwashed by the media and, the game is the best teacher. I shouldn't have to coach very much at all, you know, and just make it fun and stuff. Bro, if your parents got on this program, they would identify you and they would say, I'm getting the F out of this situation right now. I'm getting myself another team and another coach. So definitely don't recommend this program to your parents.
You might have your whole team bounce on you.
Seriously.
For parents, you've worked with hundreds of players over the years, if not thousands. How big of a role do the parents play in the success of the child? You know, or maybe you don't have to name names, but, you know, share an instance where a player or a parent either, you know, helped or hindered the child's development. Meaning like this kid could have gone on to be a Champions League player and didn't because the parents, you know, did this or that.
Yeah, it depends on the level, because I'll give you extreme examples. On one extreme, you got the 11-year-old who's naturally, genetically gifted, big, fast, strong, and is culturally aligned, has had soccer in his heritage for a very long time, understands a lot of things, you know, is very skilled, and he dominates his age group, for instance. So that's one extreme. And the parents might be complete morons. Sorry, let me take that back. The parents might not be the best to guide or mentor their kid, but their kid is great and they can go very far. That advantage will progressively get smaller and smaller and smaller the older the kid gets and the higher the level the kid achieves. And then that particular example, the parent becomes more and more important to the success or failure of the kid, because then the mentality side of the equation ends up being what differentiates, say, a top pro from mid pro, from a low pro, from somebody who flames out and doesn't even become pro or just quits. So the mentality is very important. And then that parent, that particular example, might not be a good situation, you know? And then there's the opposite scenario where the kid might be not ultra talented and mid-level, but still has a lot of potential, and the parent just knows their stuff, okay? Maybe they were a former pro, or they just know what it takes to achieve a very high level of success in a particular domain. So they might be a doctor, but they might be a national class, international class, world class doctor, for instance. So they know what it takes. This is a common thread across all professions. It doesn't have to be professional sports. They know what it takes. So they will inculcate that to their child. And then the child themselves, even though they were mid-gifted and mid-level, will excel and perhaps eventually surpass the example A that I gave that had all the advantages from the get-go. I don't know if that answers your question, Ben, but I think that provides the spectrum, and there's everything in between.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically the parents play a massive role.
Massive, massive. It just depends on at what stage, you know, the kid happens to be at, as to how important the parent role actually is.
How involved do you think the parent should be? Because I feel like there may be some cases where the parents are overstepping and they're way too involved, or after every session, they're coming up to the coach and, you know, asking questions, or, you know what I'm saying? Or maybe in the car ride home, it's like they're telling their kids all these things, but at the end of the day, they themselves don't even know what they're talking.
It's hard to know, Ben. It's hard to know. It depends on their level of knowledge. Honestly, I segregate it into two pieces. The piece that is soccer specific and the piece that is non-soccer specific. Okay. So the piece that is soccer specific, it depends on the level of knowledge of the parent. Okay. And the capability for them to really see the long-term trajectory of where everything is headed. And then the non-soccer piece is the mentality that I just described to you, is to how to fortify and develop and strengthen the player's habits correctly and the player's mentality and the player's culture correctly. So there's those two components. If the parent has them both, man, sky is the limit. Okay, so what comes to mind, because everybody knows the name, are the Reynas. So Gio Reyna has the father, Claudio Reyna, U.S. men's national team legend, played in Europe, very successful career. He even got involved on the running a club side of the equation after his career. So he's got the sporting side locked down, and he's got the mentality non-sporting side locked down because he was at the peak of his profession. You know, you've got both ingredients. And now you have a kid who is also genetically gifted. Okay, man, sky's the limit. And now you see where his son is at. He's at one of the top clubs in Europe and at a young age, and is going to have a phenomenal, fantastic career. So that, again, one side of the spectrum. And then there's the other side of the spectrum, which is outlier, least common, will probably never happen, but sometimes does, is what comes to mind, forgive me, Ben, is Mike Tyson. To Mike Tyson, parents weren't in the picture. Parents weren't there trying to make Mike Tyson Mike Tyson. So zero involvement from the parents. But guess what? Somebody took over that parent role, kind of, and took them to new heights. And that person who took over that parent role, I forget the gentleman's name, very famous boxing coach, boxing legend. He has the boxing expertise and the non-boxing specific expertise to make Mike into the monster that he became. So again, both extreme scenarios, and there's going to be everything in between. But the general rule is, if you are lacking one of the two pieces, the non-soccer or the soccer, you're already at a disadvantage. If you're missing both pieces, the non-soccer and the soccer-specific stuff, as a parent, you're at even worse of an advantage, which brings us full circle to the 343 masterclass. I'm trying to at least help the parents get up on that curve and make up some ground on the Claudio Reyna. You're never going to be Claudio Reyna for your son or daughter, but hey, let's help you out. Let's get you up there, you know, sooner rather than later.
The parent that comes to mind for me is Tiger Woods. That's where, you know, from the age of three, this fool was having him hit like 1,000 balls a day, or sneaking him onto the course every single time. And yeah, it's like a Tiger. He became the best in the world. So,
yeah. And people might say, and I agree with them, oh, well, Ben, Gary, you guys are, it's survivorship bias. You know, because most parents, if they do that, they'll burn their kid out, the kid will rebel and never become anything. I get it. It's for me, it's a necessary but insufficient condition, what we've been discussing. It's not a guarantee of anything. But if you have these components, if you do these sorts of things, I think the chances are a little bit better.
And I think if you can instill like the love of the game in a young child, like the burnout's not going to happen.
That's
whereas,
key.
Like, the kid is more so wanting to go and train versus the parent, you know.
That's
like
key.
For example, if you're a, you know, husband and wife, and from the moment your baby is born, you guys both watch soccer every single day, and okay, the kid's going to love watching and going to want to play. He's not going to get burned out, you know, because he loves it, versus like if it's like, all right, Johnny, today we're signing you up for soccer and you're going to be training every single day, but you've never watched a game in your life, you know, there's no chance that that kid's going to, one, make it, but also, two, he's going to get burned out. He's not going to enjoy the game.
Yeah, and burnout's a whole other episode maybe we can tackle at some point, because a lot of what's written and discussed here in the mainstream is just nonsense, and it's all excuses, or a vast majority of it is excuses. Because if you're good at something, if the player is the best on his team or one of the best, and they're having all these successes, humans like to do what they're very good at. So I've never seen a kid who is really good at soccer, like, quote unquote, burnt out. The kids, I'm talking about the kids, okay? When it's just about playing, I'm not talking about pros, okay? That's a whole other matter, okay? But the kids, if you're good, you're killing it, you're scoring 5 goals a game, you know, they're not going to get burnt out. If you take them to the park every single day of the week, but they're the best, they're already the best, and you take them to the park every single day, oh, go play some pickup, oh, go kick the ball, they're not getting burnt out. It ain't happening.
So do the pros get burned out then? You see that a lot?
Yeah, man. There's countless cases, man. Countless famous cases. There's this, maybe we can put this clip in. It's Mourinho talking to, I think it's Dele Alli, when Mourinho was the coach of Tottenham. And this player had world-class, legit world-class potential and capabilities. But he had the non-soccer side of the equation completely backwards. Mentality all fucked up, not disciplined, irresponsible, not committed. And look, everybody's different. Maybe he didn't even like soccer. Because, if you just don't like it, you just don't like it. I don't know. But that's a very famous case of, I don't know if it was burnout per se, but of a situation where, yeah, a pro just decays and disappears.
Maybe you tell me to fuck off, but I have to tell you exactly what I think. And for me, since the beginning, I had no doubts about your potential. I saw you do incredible matches and incredible things, but I always felt that you had ups and downs. There is a huge difference between a player that keeps consistency and a player that has moments. And that is what makes a difference between a top player and a player with the top potential. It's something that you don't have to share with me. I think it's just for you to analyze yourself and to realize why my career is being, okay, MK Dons, Tottenham national team, bang, and then you reach the top, and then why you have in your career these little ups and downs, I don't know. I don't know if it has to be to your lifestyle. If in one period you are an amazing professional, if in another period you become a party boy going, I don't know, I have no idea. Only you can know that. I am 56 now, and yesterday I was 20. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And today I'm 56. Time flies. And I think one day, I think you will regret if you don't reach what you can reach. I'm not expecting you to be the man of the match every game. I'm not expecting you to score goals every game. I want just to tell you that I think you will regret. You should demand more from you. Not me demanding more from you. Not me, nobody, you. I think you should demand more from you.
No, I understand.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you.
See you later.
And yeah. I think it happens to more pros than people realize, again, because of survivorship bias and that soccer has no memory. The fan base and the media in general always follow what's hot, what's new. You know, then if somebody fades and decays and dies and disappears, that story disappears too. Nobody follows up with that stuff. Everybody follows the latest and greatest and who's doing good. And so you don't see the 90% plus of pros that just decay and disappear. You only see the 10% that continue and have a full career after that. So it happens all the time. And in my estimation, It's because soccer becomes a job, which it is. It goes from something that you just play with friends, with whoever, even if it's in competitive youth circuit, it's just playing. It's not a paycheck that you're getting. And it turns into legitimately a job where you have to wake up every morning, you have to go to training, you have to eat right, you have to sleep right, you have to rest right, you have to compete, you know, for your playing time and minutes. You have contractual things going on. You have, I mean, the laundry list is enormous. So it's a job. It that takes a toll on the vast majority of pros.
Yeah. And the other thing is like the distraction side of it. Like now all of a sudden you have all this money that you've never had. People want to be your friend. People, you know, girls are after you. And
just imagine, and it's worse. It's, in my opinion, it's worse than what's known as the entertainment industry, generally speaking, like if you're an actor or actress or these sorts of things, because much of the elements are the same, but your lifespan is much longer as an actor or actress. You could, you know, start at 13 and you could be 70 years old and getting jobs, you know, but in soccer, it's so compressed, the life of a pro. If you can do 10 years, that's a good professional career. If you could do 10 years as a pro. And it's worse at the very beginning stages, because if you don't crack it from the get-go, that takes you on a completely different trajectory than if you crack it from the very beginning.
Right. I mean, look at Clint Eastwood. This was 94 years old and still directing movies. This was a legend. But even so, like you said, if you don't crack it, like you can be an actor and suck for the first 60 years of your career. And then all of a sudden you have your big break in football. It's not the same. Football is not forgiving. You know, if you don't crack it at 18, 19, your pathway is not going to be easy.
Yeah, no, and professional sports generally, but yeah, man, soccer is brutal, given also it's international. It's an international competition. So you're competing with the global workforce and not just the local workforce.
I like this episode, Gary.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. We just hit the 1 hour mark. I think it was a good capstone of the 7 or 8 masterclass lessons that we did. And I think it puts us on a trajectory for new topics. I don't know what we should cover next. I think we can experiment to see if we can dive into the other lessons that actually show an activity or an exercise. And we can just talk about the activity or the exercise in audio form.
Right. Yeah, that'd be good. I think the biggest thing that I've, you know, taken from all of this is, you know, instilling that love of the game for the kid. It goes such a long way, you know, and as a parent, it makes your job easier, because then you're not having to force the kid. You're not having to say, you know, wake up, it's time for your game. You know, it's the opposite. The kids are waking you up and saying, Mom, I'm gonna be late for my game. Wake your ass up. Let's go.
It's key, man. It's key. And that is why when parents reach out to me, it's hard for me to give advice. They're looking for advice, and it's hard for me to give advice because it's all situation dependent and context dependent. And the parent is the one who actually has the best view by far of the context and the situation. So maybe all that is needed in a particular parent situation is precisely what you just said, Ben. Hey, just nurture their love for the game. Don't worry about taking them to the wall. Don't worry about taking them to a personal trainer. Don't worry about all these sorts of things. Your particular kid in this particular moment, and maybe for the next year or two, all that is needed from you is to just make sure that he's having a great time. And because parents will ask me very specific things, you know, and they'll give me context, but it's not enough. They'll say, the coach A and coach B or club A and club B situation that you posed to me at the beginning of the episode, Ben, I get a lot of those, a lot of them. Okay. Should we go to this MLS next club that is 1 hour away, or should we stay with our local club and coach who is phenomenal? You know, how do I answer that question, Ben? It's very tough. I don't know how good your local coach is. I don't know what, you know, your teammates, you know, what their level they're at. I don't know what the potential of this team is, how far it goes. I don't know the level of enjoyment your player is currently having. And I certainly don't know what level of enjoyment or lack thereof they'll have if they uproot and move somewhere else. You know, and again, all the elements over there. I don't know how good that coach is. I don't know how good that club is. I don't know what, you know what I mean? Like it's just an impossibility. So I repeat for the fifth time, probably this episode, that is why we created the 343 Masterclass, which attempts to give you as many tools as possible so that the parent can absorb them and then use that in conjunction with the context that they know, are the only ones who know, and make better decisions.
Yeah, well, coming soon, a Gary Kleiban AI chatbot. You can ask him anything you want.
I laugh, but yeah, we're working on it.
Hey, you know what I just really got? We're 1 year away from a World Cup.
No shit. No, wait. No, it's right? The summer though. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's next year. That's how I'm looking at it.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, man. I wonder how that's going to go.
Canada might be part of the US by then. So we'll see.
That's some funny stuff, man. That's some funny stuff. And next, Mexico. You know, we're calling it the Gulf of America now?
Gulf of America. We're buying back the Panama Canal. We're going to buy Greenland.
Yeah, we're going to have a very interesting next handful of years for sure. Hopefully it's all positive. I'm rooting for it to be all positive. I have a strong feeling that there's going to be pain, but at the other side of the tunnel, I think it's going to be phenomenally bright. And for folks who are still sticking around at this episode, 1 hour in, awesome. We treasure you. You see these shirts right here. We'd like to get more of them, and let us know in the comments if you want some 343 shirts so that we can start kind of gauging a little bit of the appetite for some merch. Because we've been wanting to do something like this for a very long time. And, you know, for those of you who write us in the comments, you know, we'll keep track of it and we will ship to you guys for free the first batch.
If you comment box, just simply box, the first five people to do it, we'll send you a 343 box with a nice shirt.
Brilliant.
No
brilliant.
Cost. I like that. It's a good way to see who listens to the end, huh?
Yeah. No, 100%, man. 100%. You shall be rewarded.
People are going to see the comments box, what the fuck's going on?
No, but it's just fucking high quality stuff, man. And that's one of the reasons, you already know this because we have a million discussions, but for the folks out there, if they even care, one of the reasons that we haven't launched it, first off, I'm spinning way too many plates. It's just impossible for me to do. And two, the quality needs to be right. I'm not interested in a classic merch offering that regular businesses or people do. Nah, legit stuff like this one. Legit. I've had the same one how long, Ben? For like 2 years. No shrinkage.
Not two years, Gary. Like 7 years.
I don't know. People think I'm bullshitting. Anyway, it feels as if it's new still, Benny. And it doesn't fade. It's phenomenal. And that is what we need to do. And we also need to figure out a way to make it viable, because how we talked about earlier about time, energy, and effort not being free, you know, how do we maybe make this into something that's worthwhile also, Ben, for our time, energy, and effort without breaking the bank? You know, I don't want to make a Supreme brand, right? Where a t-shirt costs, I don't even know what it costs. What is it, over $100, Ben, for a t-shirt? I don't even know.
As the years go on, it keeps getting more and more expensive.
Do you have any idea? Is it like $100 for a t-shirt?
Oh, look, I'm just going to click on the first one that comes. $108, the first one I see.
Yeah, but we don't want to do that. But at the same time, you can't do it for $20. Like, that's right. That's ridiculous. You got shipping costs. And again, we're not going to be shipping it in a stupid little yellow bag. Okay, we're going to ship it in a proper box. That's why we're asking you to do hashtag box. But, yeah, we just have to figure it out. And I think this is step one. So if folks, you've stuck around for us for an hour, you guys are legends. You guys have my eternal respect. And we're going to try and do everything that we can. And we always do this for our longtime members and audience. We treasure you. Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.